Welcome to a Wholeness Podcast, a healthy home for hair professionals and our clients, where health and happiness is the top priority for those within the hair industry. Serving those who serve and giving the hair industry one great big hug. Hello, I'm your host, Fliss Downs, a barber, yogi, and meditation teacher. Come on in. Before I crack on with today's episode, if you haven't done so already, please hit the follow button on Spotify or on iTunes and leave me a star rating and review. By doing this, you will be helping me reach a wider audience and get the message out there sooner rather than later. I'd also like to mention that this podcast is proudly sponsored by Earth and Soul Pizza. If you are local to or travelling through Bairnsdale, use my promo code LOVEFLISS. That's LOVEFLISS. And get yourself a free large pizza when you buy one. With locally sourced produce and food exceptionally made by the team at Earth and Soul Pizza, be sure to get your wholesome, blissful pizza. In this week's episode, we have a very special guest. You may remember Kerry Blue from episode 39, founder of Affirmation UK. In that episode, Kerry and myself illuminated the LGBTQ plus community and also shone the light in the education platform Kerry's providing in the hair industry and out to the world. Since that episode, Kerry has gone on to have their top surgery, which they had been wanting for many, many years after battling going through the NHS in the hopes of receiving their surgery. As time went on, Kerry built up the strength and the courage to set up a GoFundMe page for their top surgery. And it just so happened, our special guest who's on today, Dr. Yanis Danos, was Kerry's surgeon. Yanis is one of the UK's leading gender affirmation surgeon, specialising in top surgery for non-binary and trans men. You may have also been following mine and Kerry's conversations on live IG at The Yoga Barber. And if you haven't, firstly, go back to episode 39 with Kerry Blue. Biology is very confusing, but kindness is so simple. And go back to the live IGs with Kerry and myself. It's been so humbling to be able to get to know Kerry over these last few months, to hear their story and also be taken on the journey with them for their top surgery. When Kerry was talking about Dr. Danos, I couldn't help but reach out to him personally and connect with him further to gain a better understanding around the gender-affirming care and surgeries. And of course, connection leads to connection. I couldn't help but ask Dr. Yanis Danos to come onto AWP. He is certainly a man that is dedicated to his work. He knows what he believes in. He stands up for the rights of other humans. He's very well educated around autonomy, as well as the laws and ethics of the medical world. Yanis has lived and trained in numerous of countries, and he now resides in Athens, but goes back and forth to the UK as well to do the work he does. I've personally never met a surgeon who completely and utterly adores their work, their patients, and the law and ethics around medical care. What I loved in this conversation between Yanis and myself is how he effortlessly shared his beliefs and outlooks in life. Having had a conversation with Yanis firsthand, I can completely see why Kerry felt so comfortable and safe in Yanis's hands to go through such a big life-changing moment in their life. So it brings me great pleasure to bring you this conversation between myself and Dr. Yanis Danos. This conversation is highly educational, informative, and I certainly came away from the conversation learning a thing or two about gender-affirming surgeries, and not just surgeries, but just gender-affirming things in general. As you listen to this episode with myself and Yanis, if you've got any questions that come to your mind, pop them down and do send them to me directly or to Dr. Yanis Danos. Enough talking and more listening. Let's get stuck into it.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm in Athens. It looks really sunny outside, so it looks like a nice Friday.
Athens now?
I've moved my family life since January in Athens. I'm still going back and forth to the UK, and I will be doing so at least until the end of the year. And then I will have to make some major decisions on whether I'll carry on operating on both countries or if I will settle for good in Athens. It will depend on a lot of things. We'll see.
I bet. And are you originally from Athens?
No, I'm originally from the second largest city in Greece, which is called Thessaloniki.
I've not heard of that.
But you heard it?
No.
No, it's a very historical city with more than 2,300 years of history. Okay.
Wow.
And it has more than a million population nowadays. But yeah, Athens, I guess Athens covers up everyone else when it comes to Greece. Since I'm traveling a lot and because of what I do, I think Athens was better positioned for me, better connection with flights,
Yes.
a metropolitan city. So yeah, that's why we took the decision to come to Athens.
Wow. How are
But
you
I'm
finding
not.
living between two countries?
I'm used to it. In my life so far, I studied for 6 years in Romania.
Yes.
Then I had my basic training in Greece. Then my oncoplastic breast surgery in France. Then for 11 years in the UK. So I'm fine with everything. It's fine. No problem whatsoever.
Oh, I love that. And it's been so fascinating to look at your background and the copious amounts of studying that you've done and that you've had to go through to get to the speciality that you've got to today. So it's been many, many years. I can see that you've just put time and effort and energy towards gaining knowledge around performing surgeries in general and being in the medical sector. So, and now you're thinking of going back and forth the UK and Athens. What's that reason for the move?
Well, there are a lot of things. And if we are to explore why now, we have to go back to why I left Greece in the first place and moved as a specialist general surgeon dedicated to breast surgery in the UK back in
Yes.
2013. So I think it all comes down to how we make decisions in our life in general. You are
Yes.
in a certain place, you have certain dreams and aspirations. And sometimes you need a kick, someone to push you just a tiny bit, and you make a big decision.
Yes.
And then with time, things do change. Your priorities change, the way you react to the environment, to external stimuli changes, what you want to offer and whether you can offer that where you are changes as well.
Yes.
So it's a combination of a lot of things. It has to do with family life. It has to do with my priorities as an individual. It has to do partly with how things have changed in the UK in the last few years as well.
Yes,
So
lots of changes.
yes, which of course are not specific for the UK. I feel the whole world is changing pretty much faster than I'm used to it, at least. But I don't know how other people perceive it. And I feel I missed Greece a lot. Although the things that kind of drew me out of it are still here, I am a different person and I can cope with them in a different way.
Yes.
But key elements like the language, the smell, the sunlight, as you grow older, you do miss them a lot.
Yes, I love a Greek salad with feta cheese and olives.
It tastes different if you are in Greece than anywhere else in the world.
I bet. Well, it's just like when you have an Indian takeaway in the UK, that's so different versus going to India and having the traditional Indian food is so different versus what we experience on the Western side, you know?
You're absolutely right. I think we get a version of something. But if you don't taste the original at some point, even the setting, even if it's exactly the same product, but it's been served in the original setting, I'm sure it tastes different.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, how many years now then would it be that you've actually been a surgeon? You mentioned about being a general surgeon and then, of course, moving over to the specialty of breast surgery. So, in total, I can't remember from your bio what year you actually qualified as a surgeon.
Well, I qualified as a doctor in 2002, and then I qualified as a general surgeon in 2011. I was a breast surgeon dedicated to oncoplastic breast surgery. This means that I had to deal with mostly with cancer cases until 2017. And in 2017, I dedicated my profession to gender affirming care, and specifically gender affirming surgery.
Yes. Through that career of yours, 2017, that's when you decided to point your career and
Yes.
decided to go down the specializing in top surgery for non-binary and trans men.
Exactly. But I don't think that no one wakes up one day and says, this is what I want to do. I'm just going to shop around and do something else. Luck is always a part of all of our choices in life. And in 2017, I ended up working in a unit where gender affirming top surgeries were offered under the NHS. I got exposed to that line of work and I got immediately hooked. So from the first week or two, I went to the then director of the unit and said, this is what I want to do. So how can I just dedicate myself to it completely? And although at that point, that surgeon who I owe the beginning of my training did not exclusively work in gender affirming care. They were splitting their time between breast cancer work and gender affirming care. But I said, this is for me, this is what I'm going to do. This speaks to me in volumes, not only as surgery, but also from a moral and ethical point of view, my philosophy in life, how I want to offer, I want to help others. And so I started then. And gradually, of course, 7 years later, a lot of things have changed.
My goodness me, absolutely. And you said about how in your first week you got hooked. What do you think it was within that first week that just drew your attention to the gender affirming surgeries
Yeah.
over other types of surgeries?
Well, mainly it brought back to me that feeling of helping others, which, yes, it is essential for all types of medicine, but with time, any profession becomes some kind of routine. You do the same thing again and again, and the pleasure you get from it. And the feedback you get from your patients kind of plateaus, becomes the same. And then gender affirming care brought everything back, brought back to me why I wanted to be a doctor in the first place. Because I wanted to help, because I want to be there for people, because I wanted to see how my work has an effect on their lives straight away. And because I also have a degree in medical ethics and the law. And from that point of view, it also brought back all my ideas about autonomy, about justice, about doing good, okay? And all this polemic on against gender affirming care, which I don't understand, or at least I didn't understand in the beginning, just made me angry about it. I wanted to get involved. I wanted to help more. So if you put all this together, I said, yeah, this is what I want to do.
And the difference between working with cancer patients to then somebody that is wanting to go through a sex transition, very, very different circumstances. And I guess for you, as what you said you noticed the difference in somebody's life straight away. Whereas I guess when it comes to cancer patients, it's a big long journey for them to recover from that surgery, to become cancer free and go through chemo and radio, etc. So what would you say is the difference in seeing that automatic change with somebody that is from a cancer perspective versus a gender affirming surgery perspective?
Well, please remember that if someone is coming to a surgeon to treat their cancer, they will always make this connection of that person with their cancer diagnosis and their cancer treatment. It's not a nice connection.
Yes.
When someone comes to have top surgery, a life-changing, life-affirming, okay, completely overhaul of someone's life in a positive way, this is how you get connected then. So the relationship you have with your patients, and I'm calling them patients in the very broad sense of way, okay, because I don't think anyone is ill or sick, yes?
Yes, yes.
So that connection is completely different. So
yeah.
For example, I can recall cases where I could see in a social gathering an ex-patient of mine that was treated for a breast cancer, and they would avoid making eye contact.
Yeah.
Because of that strange bad feeling that is associated with
yeah.
myself.
Wow.
And on the other hand, patients that had gender affirming top surgery with me would be really thrilled and will come and talk to me and will be laughing, and they would send me a postcard from their first holiday abroad, and it's a completely different setting.
Wow. Yeah.
Of course, when I'm saying all this, I don't want to underestimate at all what breast surgeons are doing. And it's also a very rewarding specialty, a very rewarding experience. It just wasn't for me when I got exposed to that line of surgery.
Yes. A very different experience being on the other end of surgery, being the surgeon, because from what you're saying, I can really understand the different type of energy you would feel from those patients. And so for you, getting a postcard from somebody on their holiday, in a roundabout way, a more rewarding position to be in than being on the cancer side, because of that completely different energy. It is a very different energy by the sounds of it from what you're saying. But on the same side of when you're working with breast cancer patients, that's still rewarding because you're still doing good. As a surgeon,
Yes.
you are still doing something to help a patient. It's just a very different type of good in the world.
It is. And I personally feel that when I'm doing this type of procedures of gender affirming top surgery, that I also help not only an individual to get where they need to be, but I also help, I try to help the society in total to change, to become more positive against someone's autonomy, if we can. So I feel that what we do is not only revealing and affirming for an individual, but also for us as a group of people in general.
Yeah. But it's for the greater cause, really, isn't it? And
I hope it is.
Yeah, when I think about it, you're saying it's not only amazing and good for the individual, but actually for you being an ally to the trans community, that within itself, you going through what you've had to go through, and I really want to at some point dive into what challenges you as a surgeon have experienced through being in the gender affirming surgery side of things. But I guess really for you to be able to do such a thing for people that are wanting to go through their sex change, you can also speak on behalf of them being an ally and saying, actually, yes, there are people out there that don't feel like they are in the correct body. And you talk about the autonomy as well. There are people in this world that are born and with inside of them, they do not feel like they are the sex that they was born.
Yes. So this is why we have stopped using the term sex change since 2015 through a consensus in one of our conferences. So this is why we are talking about affirming care. And we're talking about gender-affirming surgery instead of sex reassignment, which was a very outdated term, okay? Because we feel that this incongruence between someone's gender assigned at birth and how they feel, it comes from things that we don't completely understand. It comes from very early in life. No one wakes up one day, you know, at some point in their lifetime and say, yeah, what day is today? It's Friday. Well, I'll change my gender today. It doesn't work like this. So yes, and it's not a big percentage in the population. Okay, it's not like They are coming to get us to change the way we live or something like that. Okay. It's a very small number and it's a very unique type of people. I have learned a lot of them. I admire them. I think that they are great on how unique on how they perceive the world. I think I've made myself a better person since 2017, since started working with gender diverse individuals. So yeah, I mean, this is my calling, but I understand why it's not for everyone.
So, touching on the terminology there, even when I was to say sex transformation, would you still correct somebody on that saying and say, you know, for instance, you'd say, oh, Fliss, actually, when you're talking about surgeries like this, the terminology we would use is gender affirming surgeries and not sex transformation.
Well, first of all, I pick and choose who I correct and why I correct them. Okay. And if your heart is in the right place, feel free to use any term you like. Okay. If you are using a word in a specific way to try and bully or harass someone, then yes, I will correct you. Okay. I mean, I correct, for example, I correct my staff if they misgender my patient, even if the patient is under general anesthetic and they cannot hear a thing, I will still correct them. Okay? But this is something else. The problem starts if you use a word and I try to correct you, just not correct, let's get away from that. And I try to inform you on how we use the words, and then you keep using them. So I tell you, please don't use that because for some people it's considered harassing. And then you know that and you keep using it, then yes, then I will probably get mad.
Yes, that's understandable.
So transformation or transition or even affirmation, everything is fine. If you use any word you like, okay? But
It
just
comes down to the context and, like you say,
Yes.
how one is talking about it. You know, we're having an open discussion here, and both of us are allies for gender affirming surgeries and also the LGBTQ plus community as well. And even just me asking that question, I feel so comfortable asking you that because I'm actually just generally curious because there's always rooms for me to grow and for me to learn along the way of being of support. Obviously, knowing Kerry as well, which of course Kerry's one of your patients, and just being able to speak to Kerry online and also speak to them on live IGs. And of course, I spoke to Kerry before their surgery and then after their surgery as well. And it's just been so wonderful to be able to see the difference in Kerry from the before and after, and even being able to hear how they felt throughout that time and be your support on Instagram and chatting about that over the course of those months. So to be able to be okay to be corrected, and I slip up sometimes. My brother's part of the LGBTQ plus community, and I've met a number of his friends, and sometimes you do accidentally say the wrong gender, and
Absolutely.
it
And
happens.
also please remember that language changes on its own. And maybe what we just discussed today, maybe in 5 years from today, maybe we will say, you know what? It wasn't correct what we used in 2024, and let's change that again. That's fine. Change is part of human nature. It's no problem with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's such a pleasure to be connected with yourself as well because Kerry raves about you,
Okay, that's
and
very kind of Gary.
it's just so beautiful because also I've mentioned to my brother, I said, oh, I'm going to be speaking to Ioannis, who's a surgeon and he specializes in top surgery. And even the thought of, oh my goodness, what happens if one of my brother's friends was interested in top surgery? Well, I now can say, hey, Ryan, recommend Ioannis to your friend. Of course, we're talking about gender affirming surgeries and that you specialize in top surgery for non-binary and trans men. In your mind, and with your studies, with your experience, your interaction with people, and actually being one-to-one with these beautiful humans, what is your definition of a trans man? Because I think Many people get quite confused. What is that? What does that mean?
Okay, yeah, I mean, I can tell you what my definition is, but I don't think that's important. Important is to accept the term if someone wants to use it. Not all people will be happy with using the word trans man. I mean, trans man in general is someone who was assigned female at birth, and at some point in their life, they transition in identifying as a male. If, as a society, we can get away, we can move away from the binary notion of gender between masculine and feminine, there is no reason to use the word trans at all. Someone is either a male or a non-binary or a female, and that's fine. Whether we need to include that word trans, which is not exactly a definition of how someone is now, it could be just a definition of the process they are into. We'll have to ask them if they are happy for us to use it or not. So I mean, we're all humans, and that should be enough. If you need for medical, social, legal reasons to define someone, okay, as things stand right now, trans means a transition, someone that moved from one side to the other side. To me, there are no sides, if you ask me. We are all the same. We are humans. I don't understand this Aristotle's view of life that everything has to be in a list, in a category, one, two, three, four. I don't think life is like this. So I will use the word trans to describe someone if they are happy to do so. For all practical purposes and my work and my profession, a trans man is someone who was assigned female at birth. And they are either process or they have concluded their process of transitioning to the male gender as we stereotypically accept in our society.
Got you. And I guess partly the reason why I wanted to clarify that with you and understand your definition is because some people might not even really know what is a trans man. And so for anybody listening to this episode, they might not be that educated on, well, what exactly is a trans man? So just to confirm then, so that would mean a trans woman would be somebody that was assigned a male at birth, who then transitioned into being a female.
Perfect.
And I very much agree with you. All of these labels, we give labels to everything these days, don't we?
We do.
It's like a little bit of an obsession, I think.
It is. I mean, it serves some purposes.
It does, absolutely does. Yes. You can't disregard it because it is helpful in some ways, but I think it's really useful for people that are wanting to know a bit more and understand more about gender affirming surgeries, wanting to understand about the LGBTQ plus community, because we only know what we know. And what we don't know, we don't know. And I think it's really good to be able to identify that.
Yeah, but let me just, you're absolutely right. Okay. We know what we know, but we should also know that we don't know everything. And we should also know that knowledge does change. And when I teach, for example, I always start with the same slide. When I teach someone that I've never met before, I always start with the same slide that says there are so many things to unlearn. So this is from where we should start. It's not about learning something, it's about unlearning what subconsciously or consciously society has told you that exists. And if you want, you have to start moving away from it.
There's always room to learn, and there's always room to unlearn as well.
Perfect.
Through your career going into the gender affirming surgeries, I could imagine that you've experienced some challenges deciding to be an ally and stand your ground in terms of your morals and your ethics and what you believe in and coming back to humanity. What challenges have you found ever since you started this journey in your career?
I mean, we probably need another episode to discuss this in detail, okay? There are a lot of challenges being a doctor that wants to offer and that wants to care about people as much as someone can, going into healthcare in the first place, so moving away from your studying years, it's a real shock. And if you realize fairly soon in your career that there's not much you can change. For example, I'll go to something completely different. You try to treat someone for COPD, which is a lung condition, and you realize that it comes with a poor socioeconomic status. So people from poor backgrounds tend to have more problems because they are heavier smokers and they don't look after their health, etc., and they live in a bad environment, etc., etc. And you then realize that, okay, I can treat the disease, but I cannot treat the cause of the disease, which is something societal. So how can I try and influence that part of the disease? Mm-hmm. And you cannot, okay? Or at least you try. I mean, you get into politics, you get into pressure groups, you do whatever you can, okay? The same thing applies, in my head at least, with everything. So when I got involved in gender-affirming care, as when I was involved in breast cancer care, I wanted to get involved as much as I can. The challenges come from some people considering what I do as controversial, and they don't think that my line of work should be prioritized compared to other conditions when you're working in the public health sector, or that we should gatekeep more these cases and do less operations. So I have faced discrimination in the past. I have faced harassment online or in person. I have lost a couple of people that I knew that are not longer want to hang out with me, okay? Mm-hmm. But this is a test for them, it's not for me.
Yeah.
I'm so pleased to where I am and so content with what I do that I'm happy to carry on. It's not an easy task, and I don't think that anyone can do it. But I feel it's essential for every professional who is involved in gender-affirming care to have that mentality, to not see what they do just a technical thing. Yeah, I have the skills with my hand and I can do the operation, but they should be involved in all aspects of it, from a social point of view, a legal point of view. Try to make the connections between race and gender and class, that all of them intertwine in the same thing, and it's about controlling people. So if your heart is in the right place, you'll be fine.
Have you ever attended any protests or anything? Have you gone to the extremity?
I don't think attending a protest is any extreme action to begin with, okay? Mm. I have been to protests, okay? Mm. But also, I've been trying to educate people through lectures, through my website, through masterclasses that I have done for surgeons. I'm pretty vocal on my social. I can get pretty boring when I attend different parties because that's the only thing I want to talk about. And I mean, even if I go buy something and I hear some discussion next to me, most of the times I will intervene and try and state what I feel about it. My wife complains that my work with gender care takes the majority of my life. So I read the literature, I watch the movies, I do all these things, okay? I enjoy it. It's part of who I am.
Did you ever envision or think that you would end up down this path in your career?
Not before 2017.
Yeah.
Okay. But I knew that I wanted to do something that had to do with autonomy, with justice, with maleficence, non-maleficence or beneficence, with caring about people. This is why I pursued a degree in ethics back in 2009. So whether the fact that I ended up being here is also a matter of luck, of hard work, of resilience, but also a tiny bit of luck. Which yes. I think it's for everything in life.
Absolutely, because I guess if you hadn't have had that opportunity to go into the gender-affirming care side of things, you wouldn't have been none of the wiser, potentially. Or you might have got down there 10 years down the line, but
yes,
in that moment, that was the time when it entered your life for you to go, wow, this is actually what I believe in, and this is what I wish to stand up for and support and help, and this is where I can see the big transformations in people's lives happening.
Yeah, that's a big if. I don't know how things would have evolved. Okay, no one has seen the future. I mean, in a parallel universe, I might be still doing breast cancer work, who knows? Okay, but I am here now and I'm content. I like what I do and I will keep doing it.
Yeah. And when it comes to the surgeries with yourself, just like any surgeries, you always have a consultation with the surgeon to go through the pros, the
Yep.
cons, and the potential things that might happen and the X, Y, and Z. When it does come to gender-affirming surgeries, what is the process for somebody to get to the point of seeing yourself?
Well, are you asking about myself specifically or in general in the world?
If you know that there's two answers to that, number one, either to generally have a gender affirming surgery, and then a version
Okay.
of actually if there's to come to you, is there a difference in that?
There are some conditions that the World Professional Association for Transgender Health has listed on how someone should be considered for top surgery or for gender affirming care in general. They are not written in stone. Different countries and different professionals are using different guidance. For my practice in the UK, I have to follow what the NHS is doing, the National Health System in the UK. Because in the UK, that's considered the gold standard, and I follow the same guidance with them. I
Okay.
did perform these operations in the NHS from 2017 until 2021. If you ask me, in my private practice, I am trying to move away from what the NHS in the UK is doing. I'm trying to, for example, to avoid altogether a specific referral from a mental health specialist if there is no mental health history. So, if someone has been suffering in the past from depression, anxiety, I will still require a referral from their therapist or counselor. Not because I want to exclude them or gatekeep them, but because I feel that it's a major surgery and they should be in the right place when it comes to their mental health to go through such a stressful procedure.
Yes.
If there is no mental health issue, I wouldn't ask for anything more that I wouldn't ask from a cis person that wanted to have some type of gender-affirming operation themselves. Okay, so for example, we don't ask for mental health specialist referrals from cis women that want to have a BA, a breast augmentation.
Yes.
So why should we do that from other individuals?
Absolutely.
I mean, I have a friend who's a plastic surgeon and once told me that all plastic surgery is gender-affirming surgery.
Yeah, see, I had not thought about it like that until you was just mentioning that, because as you say, even as a female having a breast enlargement, that is still affirming their gender, because a
Definitely.
female. Yeah, and I never thought about it like that, you know? That's so true. Because all the time that I've been talking to Kerry and then throughout our conversation today, I've just been in my head thinking that gender affirming surgery is for those that are d deciding to change. And actually, no, you're so right. It's just so I'm seeing it clearly. If a female wants to have larger breasts, well, they're going to be having a breast enlargement to affirm to themselves that they are more of a woman, for instance. I hadn't seen it like that
But
before.
you can easily move away from an area of their body which is so closely related to gender. I mean, nose jobs, ear jobs, okay, Brazilian butt lifts, body contouring, okay, eyebrows, eyelashes, whatever, facelifts, okay. Why do we do all this? We do it to feel more comfort in our own body. On whether this is an internal process or we do it because of how we want other people to look at us, doesn't change the fact that we are affirming ourselves. But what we never discuss, there is no controversy in a cis woman having a BA. So I don't see why there is any controversy in a trans woman seeking a BA. So we are hypocritical when we allow everything aesthetical or cosmetic to take place, but suddenly gender affirming care is controversial.
Yes. Yeah, God, that's like a bit of an epiphany moment for me.
Okay.
I've never actually seen it like that until you brought that into the equation. Yeah. Am I understanding that you're wanting to get to a point in your career where you can see people and you can do surgeries on people without having to go through this protocol, this process? Because if this person is wanting to have this surgery to affirm who they are, that should be adequate. That should be enough.
Yeah, this is not something I have invented. It's called the informed consent model. So if someone is aware of the risks, complications, and how limited their expectations might be, they should be able to be offered the procedure. This is all in the context that there is no background of any mental health illness. But in that case, if I was supposed to do a breast augmentation in a cis woman that has been hospitalized in the past 2 years, for mental health breakdowns, or because if they've had a suicidal ideation or something, I would be very, very careful on doing that procedure as well. What I want to do, what my idea would be, is that we should not have a division. We should not treat people differently when they are seeking the same line of treatment.
And I love how you bring in the mental health side of things, because one thing that's running through my mind now is, out of all the patients that you have seen, has there been a higher percentage of people who have experienced mental health conditions or not? Have you noticed a difference throughout your career that there has been a lot of people who are wanting gender affirming surgeries, whether you're cis or not, that they have generally had mental health conditions or not? If you could guess it or talk me through that.
Okay, I can give you a number if you want to, but I would be very careful because it would be rather anecdotal. It would just be my own experience from
Yes.
people who seek their care under my services. But let's consider a few things. First of all, mental health is a major issue in most countries, which is getting worse by the day. And there are a lot of discussions on why this is happening. Is it how we live? Is it the environment crisis? Is it, I don't know, technology? What is it? Is it capitalism? There could be a lot of things. Okay? But more and more people are struggling with their mental health. Some of them are struggling internally because there is something that is out of order in a biochemical level. Some of them are struggling because of the way we treat them as the society. For some of them, it will be a combination of both. I mean, I'm not unfamiliar in struggling mentally. Okay, I have my moments. I get occasionally pretty dark, okay, or pretty sad about what's happening in the world, okay, and I find my solutions, my ways of dealing with things. Now, people who seek gender-affirming care have an internal battle because we told them at some point in their life, you know, your gender is this. And then they realize that they feel in a different way. And that on its own creates some incongruence. On the other hand, if you add to that people that don't accept them, respect them, help them, join them in their transition journey, of course, things can get worse. But not everyone is like that. I mean, I have met people with no mental health issues whatsoever, okay? With supporting families, with a solid network, okay? And there was no discussion about anxiety, depression, or whatever else. On the other hand, I have met people who struggled a lot with their mental health, and I have occasionally refused performing the operation if I felt that someone was not in the right place to go ahead with it.
Yes.
So I'll give you an example. I saw someone once and we had the discussion and everything was going okay. There was some eye contact and there was a good retention of what we were discussing. And then at the end of the discussion, I told them that, yeah, okay, let's go ahead and do the procedure. And at that moment, that person just lowered their eye view and just said nothing. And to me, that was a huge red flag. That was a point, because when you offer someone that procedure, there is usually some sense of joy, of relief, of moving forward. When this is lacking completely, I changed my narrative at once. So when I saw this reaction, I said, you know what? Forget everything we said. I'll need to see you again. I'll need to speak with your referrer again. I don't think this will work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And to the best of my knowledge, they didn't come back. Well, at least for 18 months, they didn't come back to me for their operation. After that, I left the place where I was working, so I don't know what happened with them.
Yeah.
So I do occasionally have to refuse if I feel that this doesn't work as it should.
Yes. Well, I guess you've got your patient's best interest at heart, haven't you? And so it is that thing of, if you don't feel like it's right, I guess you're reading the room, you're reading the person's body language, you're also maybe checking in with your own gut instinct. Is this feeling right? Like what you said, you noticed the response from that person, and straight away you was like, you know what, this isn't the right thing to do. And you've got to really be confident in taking somebody through that process, whether it's taking somebody through the process of actually going ahead with the surgery or not. And it's only going to be your best interest and have them at heart to say, actually, this isn't going to be the right thing for you at this moment in time. How do you approach that when you have had to be in those situations? Do you feel confident with what you're saying because you just know that it's the right thing?
Well, you can never be 100% sure, certain about anything, okay? And this applies for all medical decisions, indifferent on whether we communicate that with our patients or not, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know everything. We do make mistakes. Sometimes we're able to correct them, sometimes we're not. But as you said, we try to have our heart in the right place, and I try to be as honest as I can. And that's the best you can do. But if someone tells you that, yeah, I always get it right, or when I say no, it's a no, and they should be written in stone, this is nonsense, okay? There is a saying amongst ourselves that we all have a small cemetery in the back of our heads that we very rarely visit, of wrong decisions we made, okay? It's part of what we do. It's part of what we do. If someone thinks that they will get in a place at some point in their career where everything will be straightforward and everything will be fine and you will make all the right decisions, this kind of sitcom on a telly of the perfect doctor, okay, this doesn't exist. Okay? I mean, the empty house doesn't exist in reality.
No, no one's perfect, right? And whether we're a surgeon, a barber such as myself and Kerry, we're always making decisions at any given time, and sometimes those decisions aren't the right decisions regardless of what situation we're in.
Exactly. So at the point that you made that decision, you did the decision having in mind that it's the correct one. Okay, and that's it, and then you go by it.
So when you do go through that journey with a patient, what do you love best about taking somebody through that journey of gender-affirming surgery? What do you love about that?
So first of all, the fact that people choose myself to perform that procedure, which is they will carry on their chest for the rest of their lives, is an honor on its own. It's a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
People allow me to influence their life in such a profound way that I take a huge pride in it. It's wonderful that they invite me in their transition. And then, in most of them at least, I see the impact that it has in their lives. So I get a text, for example, from their mother or their partner of how they've changed the way they view life, even if it's very early in their post-operative period. Or I get a birthday card on the day that they had their procedure 3 years ago. Or I see how they thrive, because if someone follows me on Insta, for example, I will follow them back and I follow their lives and I see how happy they become afterwards, okay? Or how their life changes in a way that allows them to walk around us in a more free way, in a way that they can enjoy life more. This is the best thing that exists. But also, My experience with gender diverse individuals is that they are extremely creative persons. So I got exposed to their art, their poetry, their words, their music, okay, even their fashion choices. Okay, all this has opened up a world that I didn't even know exists. And it's wonderful that I'm allowed, at least in part, to be part of it. There is some joy, of course, in operating. Okay, all surgeons will love operating. I mean,
You've got
I
to,
can
right?
operate. Yeah, I can operate because it's something that we do with our hands. It feels very creative. Okay,
Yes.
and this is why surgery is considered an art and not a science. So there is a lot of creative. We can operate for 12 hours and hardly feel any tiredness. Put me on a meeting for 12 hours, and I will probably start thinking about jumping off the roof or something. Okay. So the creativity of surgery exists as well. If you combine all this together, it's a wonderful place to be.
It is a privilege when you can help change somebody's lives. And even for myself and Kerry, I think Kerry would relate to this as well, is even just cutting someone's hair can change someone's life and change how they feel. Just
Absolutely. At least I have witnessed my wife coming back home from a bad haircut, and it's not an easy sight. But on that case, I guess you can just brush it off and say, yeah, well, it will grow back. Okay. And that's it.
Yes.
Okay. But of course, it's the same thing. You are in the creative industry and you are changing people's lives as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned about how you like the arts and the culture and poems and things like that. And I know that on your website, you share that poems is a love of yours. It would be a really lovely way, shortly, if before or after you've want to add anything more to our conversation today, but I would love it if you could read one of your favorite poems for us.
Okay. I do have a favorite poem, which I know by heart in Greek. But I don't think I should just recite it in Greek. So I can find a translation and read it to you. Is that
That would be amazing.
okay?
Thank
Okay.
you, Yannis.
So the poem is called Walls, okay? And it's written by C.P. Kavafi, who was born in Alexandria, then Egypt, but he wrote in Greek. And he was a member of the LGBT community as well.
Wow.
Okay. So, highly recommend people to find his poems and read them. I'll just read a translation of The Walls written by his brother. Okay?
Wonderful. Yeah, that'd be
All right.
fantastic.
Right. So, my walls. No thoughtfulness, no sympathy, no shame had they. Who were they? Who around me came building huge walls. And hopeless here I sit I. It harrows heart and brain, this evil fate. Outside I have so many things that wait. But walls were built and heedless I stood by. And yet I never heard the noise, the cry of builders at their work. When were they there? Out of the world they sat me unaware. So, to me, it goes back to what we said in the beginning.
Yes.
It's a poem about how we have built walls around us without even realizing that they exist.
Yes.
And we have to bring them down. We have to go outside the walls. There are a lot of things happening there. I mean, I try to tell that when I give a lecture as well. You grow up and someone tells you that this is true about gender, this is true about politics, about religion, about your favorite football team, about whatever. And then you realize that there are more outside, that the world is not exactly what was offered you in a plate from your parents, your society, your geographical latitude, or whatever. Okay? These walls are not visible. But the moment you realize they are there, they can come down.
And I love that. And I think it's a very fitting poem for our talk today because Just as what you explained, it's that case of going, wow, there's so many barriers that are up. And if only we could just bring them down. And when those barriers and those buildings or, those walls come down, well, that's when humanity can happen more so. And we can all come together and actually see each other for as we are, without judgment, and love one another as they are, who they want to be. So I really love that you brought that poem to the table because, yeah, it sums up the conversation really well, I think. And I love that's one of your favorite poems.
Next time, I will say it by heart in Greek.
Do you actually speak Greek at all or
Yeah,
not?
of course, of course. I mean, I
Yeah.
lived in Greece for most of my life. So I speak Greek, French, English, and Romanian.
Wow.
Yeah,
Do
so
you ever get confused? Do you ever get your languages mixed up at all sometimes?
sometimes I do, yes.
Yeah. I think I would too, Giannis.
Yeah, but if I am in an environment or that only one of those languages is spoken, it's pretty easy.
Yes,
But
of
if I have to
course.
switch, yeah, it gets tricky.
So before we round things up, is there anything else that you'd like to share yourself? Any messages that you'd like to give out there? If there is somebody out there that is thinking about having a gender-affirming surgery, is there anything that you'd like to share?
So when it comes to patients or prospective patients, all I want to say is the information is online. Do your research, okay? There are resources, there are people that care and they will look after you, okay? And don't be afraid to say what you want. Be honest and open with your healthcare provider. It's only for the best. Don't feel scared to share your expectation or what your dreams are. And when it comes to healthcare providers, because we need more and we need more allies, this is a beautiful line of work. You get to meet wonderful people. You get to get rewarded from an emotional a point of view. Just give it a try, okay? I highly recommend it.
Thank you. And for anybody who wish to reach out to yourself, they can do so. Where's the best place? Would that be your website, Instagram?
Both website, Instagram, Facebook, it doesn't matter. I'm out there. I'm pretty easy to, I think I'm pretty easy to find.
Wonderful. Well, what I will do is I will be putting all of your contact details in the show notes. So if anybody does want to get in touch with you, then they can do so. Thank you so much, Ioannis, for coming on today and sharing your truth with me. I feel really blessed and privileged that I've had your energy because I know that through your work, you would be busy, but also to be able to connect with yourself after being in touch with Kerry. It's been so wonderful to have this discussion with you. And, you've educated me within this last hour. Even that, to walk away from me and be like, wow, there's a few things in here that I actually learned from this. So if I've only just learned a couple of things, then I definitely know there's going to be people out there listening to this that even learn as well. So thank you so much for your time today. I
It's
really,
been
really, really appreciate it.
my pleasure, Fleece, and I really wish we could meet in person at some point.
It will happen, I promise you. I plan on doing a tour at some point of the world, so
Perfect.
I will definitely come to see you, whether you're in Greece or Athens or London or wherever.
We'll find a way. Thank you very much, Fleece.
You're so welcome, and I'll speak to you soon, Giannis. All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye
Thank
now.
you. Bye.
Whew, God, it just gives me goosebumps listening to that episode. And also just knowing that I got the opportunity to speak to Giannis and to hear his story, to learn from him, to be able to bring this conversation to you all. And one of the biggest things that I've took away from this conversation with Giannis is the things humans do to affirm who they are and how they feel about themselves, whether that be wearing makeup, eyelash lifts, Botox, breast augmentations, or transitioning from male to female, or vice versa, these are all affirming motions to allow an individual to enhance their identity. I also very much loved how Giannis managed to so beautifully and gracefully informed us about his knowledge and what he believes in and stands up for. I loved how he made me aware that using the term sex change is no longer the terminology to be using. I think he said back in 2015, this changed. And also I love how when I asked Yanis, has he ever done a protest or anything of those extremities? He himself stood in all of his glory and what he stands for and said that actually he doesn't believe that's an extremity. I loved how he came into this conversation so confidently and guided me so beautifully through this conversation. And not once did I feel dis-ease with Yanis. And it was a complete privilege to be able to have this open, honest, truthful, raw conversation. And I really hope that you, yourself, the listener, enjoyed this conversation and can go away knowing you've learned something from this. And not only that, is if you yourself are within the LGBTQ plus community, please know that you have people like myself and Yanis out here who are your allies, who are wanting to shine the light on you and also to stop this judgment and this hatred towards other humans. These sorts of conversations and connecting with Kerry and Yanis is actually very close to my heart. I've spoken about my brother Ryan in previous episodes, and he is honestly, God, you can probably hear that fact that I'm just like welling up right now. But he's honestly my absolute rock. He's my number one human in life, and for me to be able to speak and voice and bring people onto a wholeness podcast. God, I didn't think this was going to get me like this. But for me to be able to bring people onto a wholeness podcast and support the LGBTQ plus community, it is such a privilege. It is so close to home for me. With my brother being part of that community, identifying as queer and being so proud of who he is. And I'm so, so, so proud of who he is. I'm so proud that he himself, like Yanis, stand up for what they believe in and the rights and ethics in humanity. I personally don't know what it's like to be judged and discriminated like many people within the LGBTQ plus community. So the least that I can do is bring you, my listeners, and the world these sorts of conversations. Because as cliche as this sounds, at the end of the day, we are all just humans, regardless of the sex, the race, our religion, our beliefs, what we do for a living, how we present ourselves and the clothes that we wear. So like I said at the end of that episode, thank you, Yanis, from the bottom of my heart, for coming onto a wholeness podcast. And I really do believe that one day I will meet Dr. Yanis Danos in person. And I know that I'm going to be meeting Kerry as well as Carol Black. I don't wish to forget Carol. Carol is the co-founder of Affirmation UK as well. So before I love you and leave you, I wish to emphasize at how helpful it is for you as a listener to rate or leave a review for this episode or even just this podcast, a wholeness podcast in general. We are shortly going to be coming to the end of season one of AWP. I've got two or three more guests to be coming on before we round up this season. I wish to take this moment to thank each and every one of you who have listened to a wholeness podcast, whether that be a few episodes or every single episode, or whether you're new to this podcast and you've just found this episode, I really do recommend you go right back to the start, listen back to the welcoming of a wholeness podcast, episode one and onwards. And please, if you haven't connected with me online, please do so on Instagram at the Yoga Barber. In the meantime, beautiful beings, as always,